And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is What's Next? Each of my guests is previewing what's next in his field, whether it's local journalism, social media, or topography. My next guest is a British journalist and a nonfiction author. We'll examine the history and the future of topography from his book, Just My Type. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Simon Garfield is a British journalist and a nonfiction author. As I said, he was educated at the Independent University College School in Hampstead, London, and the London School of Economics, where he was the executive editor of The Beaver, which I presume is their local publication. Simon lives in London as well as St. Ives, Cornwall, joining us from the greater New York area. Hi, Simon. How are you today?
Hi, I'm very well. Actually, I'm joining you from London, from my home.
From London. Well, great. Thank you for taking time away from your tea to be with us today. So that is wonderful. I want to start out, I love topography, but the thing that really cemented topography in my mind was the Macintosh computer. And Steve Jobs, when he made his 2005 commencement speech at Stanford University, said one of the best things that he did when he dropped out of Reed College was to sit in on a calligraphy class. He didn't know it at the time, but his love of fonts was actually a driving force behind the creation of the Macintosh computer's graphical interface. So clearly, Steve Jobs had a love of topography and fonts. How did you come by your love and appreciation of fonts and typography?
Well, I think Jobs has a bit to do with my interest as well, really. I mean, when I got my first Mac and seeing all those fonts on the pull-down menu there kind of did make me think, well, this is great. I've got all this for free. But, you know, someone invented these things. Someone made these things with kind of great love and care, and they all have great history. So all these, you know, all these old names like Baskerville and Caslon, and then new ones like kind of Georgia and Verdana and Helvetica. They all have a kind of, you know, they all have kind of stories attached. So I kind of thought, wouldn't that be interesting to find out more? But even earlier than that, I mean, I think my real love began when I was a teenager, and like every teenager in the 70s and 80s, you bought albums. You didn't buy CDs. So you had a great 12-inch canvas, and obviously on that you had the best that either the artist or their campaign or their marketing team could do to make you kind of, you know, think about the music that you were about to hear. So I was aware vaguely, I mean, not really as I am now, but vaguely that, you know, when I bought the new David Bowie album, you know, his name was spelt out in a different typeface every album. And I kind of thought, well, you know, what's going on here? Well, what image is he trying to put forward now? So I think it began with that, and then, as I said, you know, developed through computers.
Well, I mean, it's fascinating. Today, there are more than 100,000 fonts in the world. That, to me, was a staggering number when I read it in your book. I guess my next question is, does the world really need 100,000 fonts, Simon?
Well, the simple answer is no. But you could say the same thing about, you know, songs or paintings or something like that as well. You know, kind of any artwork. And I think the best type is art, really. You know, but we change with the times. So you could say, well, you know, we already have, you know, 100 or 1,000 love songs in the world, and do we need any more? But we do, because, you know, we are a creative race, and we like making new things for the time. You know, so you talked about what's coming up, and actually what's coming up in type is all these people all over the world now, as we speak, you know, creating, especially design students, graphic design students, are creating new A's and new B's and new C's, and trying to kind of put their soul and their emotion into letters. And you know, it's so we don't need all of them. And goodness knows there are some awful typefaces out there as well. But we certainly need a lot of them. Otherwise, our world would be very, very dull.
It would be very bland indeed. My guest is Simon Garfield. And Simon, I like the way that you're equating fonts to artwork. I think that that is wonderful. But here's a shameless plug for your book. I absolutely love the periodic table of fonts that you have on the end pages of your book. Was that your idea, or was that something that somebody else put together? Because
The original idea when we were designing the book, I can't remember who saw it first, but it wasn't our design. We found it on the internet, and we then bought the rights to it. But it is a wonderful graphic visualization of the most popular typefaces. So it's a few years old now, and there will be one or two very popular typefaces which aren't on there. But you won't be, I'm sure you weren't surprised to find that number one was Helvetica.
Right, without a doubt. And we're going to come back and talk about some of our favorite fonts and so forth in just a minute. My guest is Simon Garfield. He's got the book Just My Type. And I'm a font slut. I told you that at the beginning of the interview, Simon. I just love the different typefaces. I've got many of them loaded onto my computer. But in reality, I probably only use about two or three in my everyday life of all of those fonts, and the rest of them are just slowing my computer down. So why is it with 100,000 fonts from which to choose, we just settle on only a handful to use in our regular life?
Well, I'm the same. You know, I kind of experiment. I mean, the reason, there are several reasons. One is kind of ease. If you find something that works, you don't want to spend a lot of time changing it, although it's quite, it's obviously quite a quick thing to do now. And you find something that kind of, works for you, and hopefully, it'll work for your emails and it'll work for your, work documents. And you think, well, this sort of expresses my personality. No one's complained about this. They can't read it. So you kind of think, okay, well, that's good. It's a little bit like a sort of comfortable pair of jeans. You find something that works for you, whether it's a brand or a particular, look or style. And you kind of think, okay, these are going to do me for a year or two, And it's the same with type. But that's not to say that when you go to a party, you won't put on a great new shirt. And that's sort of, I guess, something that I try to put across in the book is that, if you want to create something new, you want to jazz things up a bit. You want to appear exciting, maybe more exciting than one really is. you can choose a new typeface, and it transforms the way that people see what you write.
Well, absolutely it does. I mean, it's a representation of who you are. Some companies have what they call an approved font that they use in all of their correspondence and all of their advertising because it fits that particular organization. What goes into the decision to select an approved font or a standard font for a company or an individual in their correspondence and in their logo?
Well, the main thing that goes into it is a huge amount of money. The corporations employ other corporations to make their logo and brand. I mean, there are two big initial choices to make. One is, do you want it to look like things that have gone before? And if so, you would choose Helvetica. So, you see it wherever you go, and it's, you would see it in Urban Outfitters and American Apparel and BMW and a lot of other cars as well and stuff. And you kind of think, okay, well, if I've got a new product, if I want to choose Helvetica, you kind of think, well, that's interesting because it'll associate myself with something that works, that's clearly been out there a long time, that products that people trust, and that's a very strong, valuable thing. So you're sort of creating a brand that hopefully people will trust from the start. Or you can go the other way and say, actually, I want to create something that is totally new, that will become instantly recognizable as me, really, or as my product. The easiest way to find that and the quickest turnover is with bands and artists and singers. And so you look at someone, in the book I talk about kind of Amy Winehouse, her choice of kind of 1930s sort of Art Deco letters is just perfect for her. It's a great choice. Whether or not she chose it or her design team, I'm not sure, but it was you know, it's kind of worked. And so basically all you need now is to see one letter of her name, and you know who it is, you know. And that's the skill. If you can do that, then, you know you've cracked it.
My guest is Simon Garfield. And Simon, before people listening to our voices say, oh, they've gone off the deep end, that this is all very esoteric, it's extremely important, the choice of the typeface. So just to give a business example of this, talk to us about the story about how IKEA's switch from the font Futura to Vendana created a public outcry, or as you called it, a fontroversy.
Yeah, it was something that people didn't know about until they entered the stores. There wasn't any big public announcement. But about 3 years ago, people would go into IKEA stores and think that there was something that had changed, you know, that something was wrong, and weren't sure what it was. Had they moved things, had they moved the furniture? Terrible, sorry. or had they changed the lighting? And actually what they'd done is they changed the font, as they say, from Futura, which is a lovely 1920s, really well-regarded in the design community, slightly sort of, you know, very strong, kind of sparky, dynamic typeface, into something that was more rounded, which was, you say, Verdana, which was, you know, it didn't really have a cultural history to it in the same way that Futura did, which was kind of German and had a sort of association with the Bauhaus and was very liberal and very creative. Whereas Verdana, the new one, you know, was created for Microsoft and in the 90s for computers. And the reason IKEA really switched was because it was just going to be easier to do something that was moved to something that had originally been created for a digital, with a digital purpose, because it was going to be cheaper and it was going to be easier to actually associate all their products with a digital font, and much, much easier to and cheaper to reproduce online. So that was why they did it. So initially designers began this big internet campaign and stuff, and then other people sort of noticed it as well. I mean, the world goes on, it must be said. You know, they're probably slightly more important things in the world, but what was really interesting about that was that people did notice, and that to me kind of was a signal that actually, you know, we are aware of fonts in a way that we weren't even aware of the word, you know, 15 or 20 years ago before we got computers. So people are becoming more font literate, and they were very interested in that switch.
And before we just confine it to the world of business, talk to us about how the typeface Gotham actually helped to elect President Obama.
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, people make different claims. You can say, well, it had a great effect or just a small effect, but it did have an influence in the overall look of the campaign. So what happened originally when the campaign began, in the very early days, not long after Obama announced his candidacy, they used something called Gill Sans, which is a, you know, interesting typeface, but it's British, it's from the 1920s, and it's sort of old-fashioned, and it's very English. Why would you choose an English typeface if you're, you know, if you claim to be the kind of the hot new thing, really? And so what they then did was switch to Gotham, which was invented just 8 years before, in 2000. And in 2008, you would see it on everything connected with Obama. So every single poster of hope and change and everything else you would see in Gotham, in all outlets, you know, posters online, on TV and everything, and that was what was brilliant about it, is that they didn't change that, and it looked the part. It was new, it was bold, it was authoritative, it wasn't frightening. You could read it a great, you know, a long, long way away, and it was terrific. And then to compare it with something like, you know, Hillary Clinton's choice, it just made so much sense, because Hillary Clinton chose a sort of a modern version of Baskerville. And Baskerville is 18th century, it's from Birmingham, and it's sort of, you kind of think, it's very nice, and you can still have it, you know, you can still choose it day to day, but it's not really the sort of thing you would necessarily associate with a woman who wanted to be the first American president. And so, you know, all those things, it's about association, and it's about consistency, and it's, as all that thought goes into it, you know, these things aren't chosen by random. And, you know, gosh, if one wanted to be cynical about it, you would look at Sarah Palin's online presence now and say, isn't it interesting that she's switched online to Gotham as well?
That is an interesting observation. My guest is Simon Garfield, author of the book Just My Type, a book about fonts. Simon, it's an intriguing study. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Just Google my name, Simon Garfield, which is like the cat, and the first thing that will come up will be my website, and then there's loads of stuff on there about the book and other things, and then you can click away and buy it online, or, you know, or even leave your computer behind and go into a shop.
Go to one of our local bookstores like Bank of Books, two locations to serve you.
I love that advert.
There you go. 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street. Simon, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Great. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.